Welcome, everyone, to the Apocalypse Podcast. I'm Steve. He is
Dr. Lawrence Van Beek.
Dr. Lawrence Van Beek. Here we are at the end of all things.
Waiting for a giant eagle to pick me up.
Yes, that's right. That's right. There's no one I would have rather been here with than with you, Sam. Something like that. I don't really know what he said, to be blunt, but it doesn't really matter. It's all good. It's all good. Hey, it's good to see you, though, my friend. And we're going to finish off chapter 21, right? And then pick it up in 22.
Keep going through 22, yeah.
So what are we about to embark upon, my friend?
Paul speaks to the people. So this is Paul, and there's people, and he is speaking to them.
Slowly or just in regular tone? With regular cadence.
In Aramaic, of all things.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So he's not talking to someone that has an MBA. Anyway. Which is one of Larry and I's favorite commercials. If you don't know what we're talking about, we're referencing a FedEx commercial from about the mid to late 90s, I think it is.
Yeah.
So anyway, cool. So folks, yeah, we're back in chapter 21. We're at the very last section of it, though, starting at verse 37, which ironically is entitled, Paul Speaks to the People. Now you know where Larry went for this. And we'll go from there. 37. As Paul was about to be brought into the barracks, he said to the tribune, "May I say something to you?" And he said, "Do you know Greek? Are you not the Egyptian then who recently stirred up a revolt and led 4,000 men of the assassins out into the wilderness?" That sounds dangerous. Paul replied, "I am a Jew from Tarsus in Cilicia, a citizen of no obscure city. I beg you, permit me to speak to the people." And when he had given them permission, Paul, standing on the steps, motioned with his hand to the people, and there was a great hush, and he addressed him in Hebrew, in the Hebrew language, saying,
"Page flip." And we'll stay with that one, yeah, because then it starts what he says, so we should be good. But at first, remember, they were carrying him to protect him, and they get him to the barracks, and they set him down, and he asked to speak to them. And he's speaking to them in Greek, obviously, and they're quite surprised because they thought he was Egyptian. And they said, "Aren't you the Egyptian that led the revolt of 4,000 men?" And this says of assassins out into the wilderness. Now, that one there was mentioned by the historian Josephus.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, Josephus talks about an Egyptian that Josephus says 30,000 rather than 4,000. And we think that was just an error in Josephus's reading.
Okay.
But there was a guy, and he led 4,000 out into the desert. And so this was one of the revolts, right? And these assassins were actually, in the Greek, it would be the Sicarii. Hmm. And you would know that from the Sicar, right?
That's right.
And the Sicar is that short curved knife.
That's right.
And the whole idea was that these guys would come up behind a Roman and, you know, a couple stabs in the side, kill a Roman, you know, and then go about their business.
Yeah, so my day's work is done.
So assassins is a good word, but insurgents might be a good word.
Oh, that's a more contemporary word that we use, right?
Yes, very much so. And these guys, what they were trying to do is stir up a revolt. They were trying to win Jerusalem back, and he wasn't the only one. There were several of these recorded around this period of time, which is why Jerusalem in Paul's day was an imperial state. Why they had to have a garrison of soldiers there,
right?
Every time these guys did something wrong, the soldiers had to step in and stop it.
Yep.
So that's what's going on in this picture. And Paul says, they said, "Well, aren't you the Egyptian?" Paul says, "No, I'm a Jew from Tarsus. I'm Cilicia," which sounds like a Toyota to me. But
yeah, it does.
That was a Celica, wasn't it?
Yes, the new Toyota Cilicia.
yes, which is a car of no obscure city.
Yeah.
Or no mean city in some of them. And I beg you, he says. And then he asked permission to speak to the people. Intriguingly, this says that he spoke to them in the Hebrew language. But probably he spoke to them in Aramaic, and even the notes on this little Bible here says or the Hebrew dialect of Hebrew, probably Aramaic.
Yeah.
So the two languages, of course, are very similar. And so now Paul is going to get permission to address the audience.
Okay. Here's Paul about to orate.
Ooh.
Brothers and fathers, hear the defense that I now make before you. This is chapter 22 now, folks. And when they had heard that, he was addressing them in the Hebrew language, they became even more quiet. And he said, I'm a Jew born in Tarsus in Cilicia. Sorry, I heard you say it, and then I was just trying to replay it back in my mind. But brought up in
Cilicia
this city.
Cilicia is always good. You can always say
it. Yeah, Cilicia. He was brought up in the front seat of a Cilicia. Educated at the feet of Gamaliel, according to the strict manner of the law of our fathers, being zealous for God, as all of you are to this day. I persecuted this way to the death, binding and delivering to prison both men and women, as the high priest and the whole council of elders can bear me witness. From them I received letters to the brothers, and journeyed toward Damascus to take those also who were there and bring them in bonds to Jerusalem to be punished.
So what Paul's doing now, of course, is he's preparing, or what Luke is doing, is preparing to talk about the conversion of Paul. Now, this is the second time, isn't it? There's one more coming?
I believe.
Yeah. So. When he's with Bernice and them, he tells this whole story again. So again, Luke in this book tells the conversion of Paul three times.
Okay.
But he's up in front of this whole group. All of these Jewish people, he's speaking Aramaic. So now they're quieting down because it's thrown them a little bit. So obviously they don't know who Paul is.
Yes. Right.
And so he tells them, look, I was educated under Gamaliel, and Gamaliel was, he was the guy when the disciples or the followers of Jesus got off the first time in the book of Acts. Remember, he stood up before the council and said, you know, let's not do something rash here, right? If this is of God, we should not stop it, or we cannot stop it. And if it's not of God, it'll stop by itself.
Yes.
And that's a time when they said, oh, well, let's let them go. So they just flogged them and let them go.
Yeah, yeah.
We were like, wow, you know, it's a different time.
Yeah, just a little flogging and you'll be fine. Don't worry about
it. You've done nothing wrong. Well, you know, five or six hits across the back, you should be good to go.
Yep.
Across the strict manner of our fathers, he says, and he talks about his zealousness. Remember, he was a Pharisee.
Yep.
And he said, and I had letters and I persecuted these Christians, the people of the way, he called them. I persecuted them even unto death, men and women. And the high priest will bear witness of this if you ask. And I had letters from him, and I was on my way to Damascus. So that, now he's getting back in. I was going to Damascus to find more of these people of the way so that I could persecute them as well. And he did this in total desire to follow God. He was persecuting those who weren't following after God the way he believed you should, which is really intriguing, isn't it? It's something even Christians have done through the centuries, you know, the Inquisitions and people always bug the Catholics about the Spanish Inquisition, all the things that happened there. But the Lutherans, they killed others, and, you know, everybody killed everybody, you know, at some point in time, whether you were a Christian or not, the killing of people wasn't as big a deal as we tend to make it today.
Yep.
So now we're on verse six.
Okay, picking it up at six. As I was on my way and drew near to Damascus, about noon a great light from heaven suddenly shone around me, and I fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to me, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? And I answered, Who are you, Lord? And he said to me, I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom you are persecuting. Now those who were with me saw a light but did not understand the voice of the one who was speaking to me. And I said, What shall I do, Lord? And the Lord said to me, Rise and go into Damascus, and there you will be told all that is appointed for you to do. And since I could not see because of the brightness of that light, I was led by the hand by those who were with me and came into Damascus. And one, Ananias, a devout man according to the law, well spoken by all the Jews who lived there, came to me, standing by me, said to me, just weird, Brother Saul, receive your sight. And at that very hour I received my sight and saw him. And he said, The God of our fathers appointed you to know his will, to see the righteous one, and to hear a voice from his mouth. For you will be a witness for him to everyone of what you have seen and heard. And now Why do you wait? Rise and be baptized and wash away your sins, calling on his name.
And so there you have it. There's Paul's conversion for the second time in this book. It was a little longer the last time. He gave a little bit more detail the last time, but this time he went through and hit the high points and talked about the entire conversion again. Remember?
Yeah.
On my way, my name was Saul in those days. I changed it to Paul after I became a Christian. But I was on my way and I saw this bright light. Jesus came to me and said, go into Damascus and I'll tell you what you're supposed to do. Now, yep. This time he says, what has been appointed for you to do? I'm going to let you know what you have to do. And then this guy named Ananias, and this isn't, remember there was a high priest named that as well, but this guy is just one of the followers of Jesus.
Right.
And the Jews liked him, oddly enough. And he comes to Paul. Remember when in the actual story, in the last story, when he comes to Paul, he says, I'm not going to him. Like, he's bringing us to death. I can't go there. And yeah. God says, no, you got to go. And so he does that. I remember one of my friends saying, Ananias is the real hero in that story.
Yeah.
Just like in Lord of the Rings, Sam is the real hero in Lord of the Rings.
Right.
In this story, Ananias. And he comes to Paul and he prays for Paul. And then Paul gets what he's appointed to do. He gets his eyesight, and then he rises and he washes away his sins and calls right. on the name. So,
right.
So this is Paul's acceptance of Christ as Savior.
Yep. When I'd returned to Jerusalem and was praying in the temple, I fell into a trance and saw him saying to me, make haste and get to Jerusalem quickly, because they will not accept your testimony about me. And I said, Lord, they themselves know that in one synagogue after another, I imprisoned and beat those who believed in you. And when the blood of Stephen, your witness, was being shed, I myself was standing by and approving and watching over the garments of those who killed him. He said to me, go, for I will send you far away to the Gentiles.
Right. So now he makes it very clear what he's called to do. Right. So, you know, back when I was actually there, when the first recorded martyr, I think, was might not have been the first martyr, but he was the first recorded martyr.
Right.
When he was there, I was there. I was a part of it. I bore witness of it. And now God says to him, okay, but now it's time for you to go to the Gentiles. And yeah. And he has the audience at this point.
Right.
And like all of these guys, right? They've got the audience, you know.
And then
and then they just, you know, throw it all away in some rash thing. You remember Peter seemed to get away with saying stuff, but Stephen didn't. Remember,
right.
He didn't get away with it. And now Stephen said, you know, you're guilty of the blood of Christ, that type of thing. And now Paul says, I was sent to the Gentiles. And once they hear this, they've had enough. They don't want to hear this guy anymore.
So here it is in 22, folks, exactly what Larry's talking about. Up to this word, they listened to him. Then they raised their voices and said, away with such a fellow from the earth. Not just get him out of here. No. For he should not be allowed to live. And as they were shouting and throwing off their cloaks and flinging dust into the air, kind of a
which
weird...
must have been more serious than it sounds.
It
sounds goofy, doesn't it?
Like, what are they, dogs or something like that? Like scratching
yeah,
at the ground?
Yeah. They look like, for us, it sounds like, you know, they just look like a bunch of idiots out there.
Yeah.
But it must have been very scary at the moment.
Yeah.
Especially if they're going to kill you.
Yeah.
24. Yeah.
The tribune ordered him to be brought into the barracks, saying that he should be examined by flogging. Hey, it works for everything else. Let's try it for this. To find out why they were shouting against him like this. But when they had stretched him out for the whips, Paul said to the centurion who was standing by, Is it lawful for you to flog a man who is a Roman citizen and uncondemned? When the centurion heard this, he went to the tribune and said to him, what are you about to do? For this man is a Roman citizen. So the tribune came and said to him, tell me, are you a Roman citizen? And he said, yes. The tribune answered, I bought this citizenship for a large sum. Paul said, but I am a citizen by birth. So those who were about to examine him withdrew from him immediately. And the tribune was also afraid, for he realized that Paul was a Roman citizen and that he had bound him.
Isn't that the weirdest little thing? So here, they're going to flog them because that's just, you know, that's just what we do.
That is step one of their four steps. They have four steps. Yeah. Everything starts with flogging. Do we have a guy? Yes. Should we? Yes. What's next? Flog him. What? He's here to deliver a package. It's on the list, okay? Like, just flog him.
Yeah. And I was thinking, and they stretched him out for the whip. I don't know if you remember that from, anyway, Paul said to the centurion.
That'll be an offline conversation.
Here's the oddity here. He says, the centurion, he says to him, are you going to flog a Roman citizen who is uncondemned? And the centurion right away goes to his boss, right? He goes to the tribune and says, you better come and hear what this guy says. He says he's a Roman citizen. And the tribune says, are you a Roman citizen? And he says, yeah. And he says, I bought my citizenship with a large price. And Paul says, I was a citizen by birth, right? Yeah. And as soon as he says that, everybody backs up. They draw away.
Yeah.
Like they're like, I don't want anything to do. So to be, you could either be a Roman citizen or you could buy your citizenship.
Right.
Even if you bought your citizenship, you were still kind of second class.
Right.
If he said, I bought it, they would have been nervous. But he said, I was born a citizen. Then you better be terrified of this.
Yes. Yes.
There was a time if you were an American citizen, you know, you'd have this kind of weight all around the world too, I believe.
Right.
It's not like that now.
No.
Like it once was. But here it was. Because these guys could be killed for messing with a born citizen.
Right, I get you.
Like they could come in and say, yeah, we're just going to kill all you guys because you don't do that.
Yeah.
Because they always want to send a message, don't mess with a born citizen.
Right.
But the other piece of it is, Paul got beat up with Silas back in earlier on. I can't remember if it was 14 or what. But he gets beat up with Silas. He never mentions it until the end of the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's almost like, oh, now he's realized, hey, if I pull the citizenship card, I'm going to be okay. Yeah. But there's got to be – but we know that Paul wasn't stupid.
Yeah.
So we got to know that there's something more going on all the way through this, right? Like Paul allowed him to be stoned several times where the citizenship thing would have saved him, and he didn't use it. But he used it at the very end when he was in Philippi,
right?
And now he used it right at the beginning here. Yeah.
Yep.
So it's really an oddity to me. And you got to think that there's something spiritual in his use of his position.
Yep. Yep.
So it is weird. It's weird that he does it. It's weird that that Luke mentions it. But it's exactly the way it happens, and it works out perfectly because now they've left him alone.
Yep, yep. Fascinating.
And we can read this next thing, but it's almost – oh, sorry, Stevie.
No, I was just going to say that's a very fascinating point just to go, you know, for one, you know, obviously Paul endured so many beatings, and why now?
But if I'm a Roman citizen, I'm leading with that. Excuse me, Roman citizen here. I would like
passport.
Could I get a table by the window? Roman citizen.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Could you flip over to the other list? You know, the one that says not to beat the guy at step one.
One that says Roman citizen.
Yeah.
Now, could you beat every one of these guys that ever came near me in front of me because I'm a Roman citizen? Yeah.
So, and the guy that was really throwing dust in the air, could you pick on him especially?
Because he was getting on my nerves. That dust was getting in my eyes.
Yeah, that's right. Like I couldn't hate that guy anymore, and I do. All right. And like you said, you know, the next little section does probably belong to the next chapter, right? But
So maybe we should just leave it. The next day, desiring to know the real reason, they unbound him and commanded the chief priest and the council be brought before him. So it's interesting that God is working everything. And I don't know if Paul knew it at the time. We you know, centuries later, we know that God is orchestrating this whole thing.
Right.
So.
Right. But gets Paul a seat in the council, and he doesn't look disheveled or, you know, the tar hasn't been beat out of him.
No.
Or the Tarsus hasn't been beat out of him. Sorry. And
you're going to find he's just brilliant with the council. He's brilliant.
So,
it's really something. But anyway, that's it for now. And it's Christmas time, Steve.
Yes. Folks, this is our annual Christmas vacation. It's you know, Chevy Chase is not going to come and drive us to Wally World or anything like that, but that was a good movie. Anyway.
Christmas Vacation was
an awesome movie. but anyway, we're going to take a break. We'll probably be back, you know, probably the first week of January,
I'm back. Yeah.
Maybe. It kind of depends how our schedules work out. So, but if you want some homework, you know, read chapter 23. There's your homework. But for everyone, you know, if you're listening to this in real time, we wish you a Merry Christmas. If you're not listening to this in real time, we wish you whatever holiday you're about to celebrate.
Happy Hanukkah. Eight crazy nights.
Yeah, that's right. I don't even know what Kwanzaa is, but everyone says it at this time of year. Like,
yeah, it's a song too. Kwanzaa, 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 Kwanzaa.
Yeah. I only know it from the Barney Purple Elephant CD, you know, Happy Kwanzaa. So if you celebrate Kwanzaa, hey, all right, off you go. But until next time, and in January, we will see you then. Thank you so much for joining us on the Apocalypse Podcast.